Good evening and welcome to the KRFP Evening Report for Wednesday, January 7th, 2026. I'm Lee Robartis in the news tonight. Bajan Mavalwala, the father of one of the Spokane 9 ICE protesters who faced federal charges, is running for Congress. Two Republican Idaho legislators ask Health and Welfare Department to hold expanded allocated child care program funds, citing Trump's fraud allegations against Minnesota Somali-run daycares. And Idaho Superintendent of Public Instruction Debbie Critchfield announces she will run for a second term as superintendent next year. We'll have details on those stories and more coming up on the KRFP Evening Report. And live in the KRFP studios in Moscow, Idaho, I'm Lee Robartis, and this is the KRFP Evening Report. Bajan Mavalwala, senior of Spokane, says he will officially kick off his campaign for Congress at a public event Saturday at the Women's Club of Spokane. Mavalwala is the father of Bajan Mavalwala II, who is facing federal felony charges stemming from the June 11th ICE protest in Spokane and is one of the Spokane Nine. Mavalwala Sr. indicated on a KRFP radio program in November that he is a Democrat. He will run in a district that has only sent Republicans to Congress since George Nethercutt ousted Democratic House Speaker Tom Foley in 1994. Mavalwala, who is a retired Army intelligence officer, said in an announcement of his campaign, "This campaign is about accountability to the Constitution, to the people and the communities that have been ignored. Let's take our country back from political extremism, unchecked federal power, and representatives who refuse to show up when it matters. Representation isn't about party labels. It's about showing up, telling the truth, and doing the work." ICE took away Venezuelans Joshua Slater Rodriguez Torres and Cesar Alexander Alvarez Perez, who was seeking asylum, from their new homes in Spokane when they showed up for what was supposed to be routine check-ins at an ICE facility on Cataldo Street in Spokane June 11th. Both had valid work permits and both had stacks of documentation 2 inches thick, which ICE officials did not look at during the 7-minute interviews. Former Spokane City Council President Ben Stuckert, who was the sponsor of Alvarez Perez in the U.S., sent out an alert on social media saying he was going to lay down in front of an ICE transport bus and asked for people to join him. Local police in Spokane made 34 mostly misdemeanor arrests at the June 11th protest against ICE agents who were detaining the two Venezuelan asylum seekers. After former Spokane City Council President Ben Stuckert invited people on social media to come sit in front of the ICE buses set to take the two detained Venezuelans to the Northwest Detention Center in Tacoma, people began showing up, and eventually 1,000 people were protesting in downtown Spokane near the ICE processing center. City and county police attacked the protests with smoke grenades and less lethal projectiles. It was more than a month later that the FBI conducted raids in the Spokane area and arrested 9 of the protesters, including Bajan Mavalwala II, who was an Afghanistan vet who served with his father. The acting U.S. attorney indicted all of the Spokane 9 on felony conspiracy charges, and the July indictments included other felony charges against some of the others who were arrested. 4 of the Spokane 9 facing years in prison on stacked-up charges, including former City Council President Stuckert, took plea deals. Bajan Mavalwala Sr. told KRFP in December his son will not take a plea deal because he is not guilty. In his campaign kickoff announcement, Mavalwala Sr. said, "My son exercised his First Amendment rights. He will not plead guilty to something he did not do. This case raises serious questions about political retaliation and the future of peaceful protest in this country." Here's Bajan Mavawala Sr. speaking on the KRFP show Rude Awakening on Veterans Day, November 11th.
How do we get from not being arrested on the day of the protest, not doing anything that the local law enforcement personnel saw worthy of putting him in handcuffs like they did 34 other people there, to him getting arrested? I'll tell you. When Pam Bondi sent this down to the U.S. Attorney's office in Spokane, the acting U.S. attorney, who had been a U.S. attorney for something like 15 years, I believe, his name was Richard Barker, he refused to indict these people. He said, absolutely not. So he was forced out. Pam Bondi got rid of him. She promoted the second acting U.S. attorney, who'd been in the office for about 20 years. Her name is Stephanie Van Marter. She came in. She didn't seem to have a problem arresting and indicting these people. Took it to the grand jury. And within about a week, I think it was 8 days after she got the position, my son was arrested along with Ben Stuckert and the others on the Spokane Nine. But the story doesn't end there. At this point, I am suspicious, right? These are indicators that Pam Bondi is directly involved. As an intel guy, there's a big difference between facts and assumptions. Mm-hmm. So I don't have the fact that Pam Bondi is directly involved with this, that Kash Patel is directly involved with this. But 10 FBI agents don't show up at the door without Kash Patel. And these U.S. attorneys all across the country are getting forced to press charges and take protesters before grand juries in Los Angeles, in New York, in Washington, D.C., where routinely those grand juries were telling Pam Bondi's little henchmen, no, we are not sending people to federal prison for protesting against ICE. Well, Pam Bondi, though, wasn't satisfied with Stephanie Van Marter. And 3 weeks after that, she canned her and brought in Pasco Mayor, right-wing extremist, and failed candidate for Washington State's Attorney General, Pete Serrano. He is a known Trumper and a big right-wing advocate. And so she hired him to be the acting U.S. attorney. Pete Serrano has never prosecuted a case in his entire life. He is utterly unqualified by every measure to be a U.S. attorney. Fortunately, on the day of the arrests, the mayor and a couple of city council members of Spokane, so Lisa Brown and Senator Patty Murray, all vocally said these are political arrests, literally on the day of the arrests, that this was uncalled for and unjust. When Pete Serrano was brought onto the scene, Patty Murray, and I think very bravely, came out publicly and said, I will use my blue slip to block his nomination to be the U.S. attorney.
That was Bajan Mavawala Sr., who will kick off his campaign for Eastern Washington's 5th District Congressional seat Saturday, speaking on KRFP in November. Republican Idaho Superintendent of Public Instruction Debbie Critchfield has announced she will run for a second term as the state's top education official this year. Critchfield released a campaign launch video in which she said she will be focused on bringing Idaho education back to the basics.
Back to the basics, especially reading. And the good news is, it's working. In our early grades, we went back to strong phonics instruction and made sure teachers had the tools they need. When kids learn to read, everything else opens up. And we're seeing that in the results. Just last year, reading scores for kindergarten through third grade increased by 11%.
Critchfield said later in the video, "I remain committed to clear, practical priorities, responsible use of taxpayer dollars, and supporting local schools as they meet the unique needs of their communities. We've made real progress, but there's still important work ahead." Critchfield has had mixed results getting her agenda through the legislature in her first 3 years in office. In 2023, she helped pass three education bills, including her Idaho Career Ready Students Program, which made an initial investment of $45 million in grades 7 through 12 programs for career and technical education. In her first year in office, she passed House Bill 92 to require high schools to teach a financial literacy class and House Bill 163 to reinforce parental rights in education. Last month, Critchfield announced she was giving up on her legislative priority for 2026, which would have invested an additional $50 million in special education, saying that Idaho's current budget deficit precludes such new spending at this time. You're tuned in to KRFP Moscow Pullman. This is the KRFP Evening Report.
Programming on KRFP is sponsored by listeners like you and by Giant Palouse Earthworm, providing DIY music booking in Moscow and Pullman, focusing on extreme metal, punk, hardcore, and the avant-garde. Giant Palouse Earthworm is available on Instagram, Facebook, or YouTube.
KRFP thanks its listeners and sponsors for helping make this programming possible.
The newly appointed co-chair of the Idaho Legislature's Budget Committee and Eagle Republican Representative John Tanner, as well as Republican Senator Brian Lenny of Nampa, have asked the Idaho Department of Health and Welfare to freeze payments for Idaho's recently expanded child care program. The health department has not yet acquiesced to the request. It comes amid Trump's fraud allegations against and federal government crackdown on Minnesota's state-funded child care programs, which Tanner and Lenny describe as similar in operation to Idaho's. The legislature appropriated $14 million to the Idaho Department of Health and Welfare to expand access to child care programs going into 2026, but had to freeze enrollment in October ahead of a projected budget shortfall. The department says it has pre-existing measures for preventing, investigating, and prosecuting fraud, but agency spokesperson A.J. McWhorter said it has been in discussion with the governor's office about potentially implementing additional safeguards. The department has not yet scheduled the release of the appropriated funds, and the Idaho Capital Sun reports the department has not stated whether or not the legislator's requested delay is imminent. Tanner and Lenny wrote in a joint letter to the Department of Health and Welfare, quote, "Recent federal enforcement actions in Minnesota, now under investigation as one of the largest welfare fraud schemes in U.S. history, have revealed systemic vulnerabilities in child care programs similar in structure to Idaho's. Those investigations identified inadequate enrollment verification, limited financial oversight, and insufficient inspection control. The Trump administration has initiated an investigation of Minnesota's child care program. A previous investigation identified inadequacies in the program. The current investigation has not yet verified those inadequacies." In December, independent journalist and conservative influencer Nick Shirley posted a video where he claimed 9 daycares run by Somali Americans had received more than $27 million since fiscal year 2020 while not actually providing any child care services. Shirley said in his video he had visited each of the 9 daycare centers and found no children. He otherwise identified as his only source a man simply called David, who himself alleged fraud using figures compiled, but what he said was, quote, "research done by people at the state capitol." Despite coming from an unverified third-hand source, the Minnesota Department of Children, Youth, and Families investigated the claims, visiting all 9 facilities identified by Shirley in his video. A spokesperson for the Minnesota department said, "children were present at all sites except for one, which was closed to families on the day of the visit. The spokesperson did say that there were ongoing investigations at four of the centers, but did not clarify if those investigations were for fraud or other aspects of the business, such as licenses. Another point of emphasis in Shirley's video was each of the nine daycares were run by Somali Americans. That has not been verified by the Minnesota Department of Human Services, nor the Minnesota Department of Children, Youth, and Families, and the news verification website Snopes said it could not independently verify whether they were run by Somali Americans. This comes amid a separate federal investigation into alleged fraud in other federally funded Minnesota Medicare and Medicaid adjacent programs. In that investigation, 82 of the 92 people investigated are Somali Americans. Trump has described Minnesota's Somali Americans as garbage.
Many banks, financial firms, and insurance companies have made bold public commitments to do their part to rein in climate change. But the Pulitzer Center for Investigative Reporting has revealed that those same companies are financing the search for new sources of fossil fuels and new infrastructure to burn them. According to Global Scientific Consensus, tapping any new oil and gas reserves will likely produce catastrophic outcomes. Josephine Molds, a reporter with the Bureau of Investigative Journalism, says there's enough oil and gas already in the pipeline to fuel a clean energy transition.
We've got enough in terms of the projects that we've already got running. We've got enough to keep us going as long as we shift over to solar and wind and all of the other renewables.
Companies continue to promote their climate commitments and argue that if they didn't do business with corporations searching for new places to drill, they wouldn't be able to work with any existing oil and gas company. President Donald Trump has called climate change a hoax and has put the brakes on U.S. efforts to transition to clean energy. The administration is also making good on campaign promises to ramp up oil and gas production and has laid claim to the world's largest oil reserves in Venezuela. According to a 2024 Joint Senate Committee report, the oil and gas industry has known about the impacts of burning fossil fuels on climate since at least 1959 and has engaged in PR campaigns of denial, disinformation, and doublespeak for the past six decades. Moltz notes the impacts of a warming planet are already being felt.
People living near coal-fired power plants or where fracking has happened, or even the people affected by wildfires. These are huge impacts on our daily lives.
After Mold's reporting exposed backroom dealing and preferential treatment on plans to extract oil and gas from the world's last rainforest that stores more carbon than it emits, the Democratic Republic of Congo scrapped a major leasing auction. This is Eric Galatis reporting for the Wyoming News Service.
In the face of rising utility rates this winter, experts say there are many cheap or low-cost strategies Oregonians can use around their homes to save on their energy bills. Jamie Seymour is with the Energy Trust of Oregon, a nonprofit that helps people and businesses save energy and money. She says heating is most often a household's largest energy expense, especially during winter, but it's also likely their biggest opportunity to save. For starters, she recommends paying careful attention to any place where warm air can escape.
All those little small gaps and cracks around the house, whether that is around your windows, your pipes, your exhaust fans, all of those in a typical home can add up to about the same loss of energy and comfort as leaving a window open year-round.
Seymour says it is best to focus on sealing up gaps before adding insulation in order to get the most benefits from it. Research shows nearly one in three Americans struggled to pay utility bills last year. Seymour adds one of the easiest ways to save money is keep your thermostat a little lower. She recommends keeping it around 66 degrees while at home and lowering it by a few degrees at night or when no one is home. She also encourages people to change their air filters every 3 months or more during heavy use seasons to keep heating and cooling systems efficient.
If you check it and your air filter is dirty, change it. Because a dirty air filter is really going to make your system work a lot harder. And that's a big waste on energy.
If people are struggling to pay utility bills, they should check with their utility provider, which may have programs to help, especially during the winter, adds Seymour. She says Energy Trust of Oregon offers cash incentives that lower the cost of energy-saving tools like insulation, windows, and heat pumps, with higher incentives for low to moderate income households. For Oregon News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
Some Montana student loan borrowers in default could have their wages garnished soon. The U.S. Department of Education will start sending notices this week to people who haven't made federal loan payments in the past 270 days. Jack Wallace is the director of government and lender relations for the student loan refinancing firm YRefi. He says borrowers need to be aware.
We need to not put our head in the sand and pretend like this is going to go away. So if you're getting an email from your servicer, which you should be, or getting a envelope by the U.S. Post Office from your servicer, you need to open it up and find out what's going on.
Montana has nearly 130,000 federal student loan borrowers, according to an Education Data Initiative report. The average debt is around $33,000, totaling $4.4 billion statewide. The report shows more than 13.1% of Montanans have student loan debt. The federal government uses the Treasury Offset Program to collect delinquent debts. Garnishments can include up to 15% of a borrower's wage and can also apply to 2026 federal tax refunds, Social Security retirement and disability benefits, or other government payments. Wallace notes you have options if you want to change your loan status. He says contacting the Department of Education's Default Resolution Group is the first step. It provides information on managing student loans, refinancing, and getting loans out of default.
There's ways to do it. Begin to make on-time payments and get it entered to the rehabilitation program so you get out of default. But you got to make your payments on time, and you got to make 9 of them on time to get yourself back in good graces and get out of default.
The federal government says it'll send 1,000 notices this Thursday, January 7th, then send more notices each month to the millions of federal loan borrowers in default. Federal loan collections paused during the COVID-19 pandemic and were supposed to resume last summer. It took longer than expected to get the collection system back in place. I'm Laura Hatch, Big Sky Connection.
And that's it for the KRFP Evening Report for tonight. Taking a look at the weather, the National Weather Service has issued a winter weather advisory for the Washington and Idaho Palouse, the Spokane area, the Northeastern Mountains, and the Okanagan Highlands. Snow, total snow accumulation up to 2 inches with localized amounts up to 4 inches in Ponderé County. The winter weather advisory will be in effect until 10 p.m. this evening. Roads, especially bridges and overpasses, will likely become slick. Plan on slippery road conditions. Winter driving conditions could impact the Wednesday evening commute. Snow may initially melt on surfaces before refreezing, resulting in slick conditions. Slow down and use caution while traveling. Be prepared for slippery roads. If you're going outside, watch your first few steps on stairs, sidewalks, and driveways. These surfaces could be icy and slippery, increasing your risk of a fall or injury. Moscow Pullman forecast is calling for 80% chance of snow tonight, mainly before 10 p.m., low 28. Southeast winds 5 to 10, becoming west after midnight, gusts up to 20. Total nighttime snow accumulation less than 1 inch. 50% chance of snow tomorrow, mainly in the afternoon, partly sunny, high 34, breezy, west winds 15 to 20, gusts up to 30. New snow accumulation less than half an inch possible. 30% chance of snow Thursday night, mainly after 4 a.m., mostly cloudy, low 30. West winds 10 to 15, gusts up to 25, little or no snow accumulation expected. And a 30% chance of snow before 10 a.m. Friday, snow level rising to 3,100 feet in the afternoon, mostly cloudy, high 40, little or no snow accumulation expected. Current temperature is 33. If you want to help KRFP keep newscasts like this on the air, plus the newscasts you hear during Morning Mix, the recordings of local events and the public affairs shows, plus the music and arts programming that you hear every day on KRFP, be sure to become a member of KRFP. Memberships are $35 a year, $20 for students and low income. You can mail your memberships to KRFP, 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843. Or you can go to the KRFP website to find out more ways to help KRFP. There's a drop-down box that says Support KRFP. There you can underwrite programming, which is a cost-effective way of letting our listeners know your business or nonprofit supports community radio. You can adopt a DJ. There's a PayPal option and a Patreon button as well. Once again, we'll gladly accept checks of any amount at KRFP, 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho 83843. I'm Lee Robartis, David Katz, assisted with tonight's newscast. Have a pleasant evening. This is KRFP Moscow Pullman. Flashpoints is up next. Lockdown Mosh Pits coming on the air at 7:30 and at 8:30. Music begins in earnest with Grateful Dead Through the Decades, hosted by Arlene. And at 11 o'clock, syndicated music from Brazil with Bossa Brasil on the air from the Pacifica Network, 10 to 11. Stay tuned for more.
Extinction Rebellion Palouse proudly supports KRFP. XR Palouse is organizing to have our governments and institutions declare a climate emergency, achieve climate justice and biodiversity, and leverage the power of arts and humanities to foster social change. KRFP is dedicated to progressive values, including justice and multiculturalism.
KRFP, Moscow is the best in the USA.
Yeah.